inner hall of life.
Welcome to the Inner Hoe Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black polyamorous feminist hoe living in New York City doing a fucking polyamorous month of episodes. Sorry.
Wow, I don't know if I can match that enthusiasm. Anyway, me, one fat black pansexual whose life is a series of coincidences who somehow landed her here, and my name is Rebecca.
Yes. Noice. Yeah, so there's two kinds of episodes on this here show. For 2 weeks out of the month, we have interview episodes, and 2 weeks out of the month, we have group episodes. But this month, it's polygamy, and we're doing a full, entire, packed 4 weeks of episodes dedicated to polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, cuckolding. There's no episode about cuckolding, but I want
Sam
there to be.
Sam just wants
it's
it
just
to be.
It's just me. Yeah, it's just me.
I think the more you say it out loud, the more it'll become a reality. So I want this for you.
I'm going to wake up one day with my fake boyfriend getting fucked on a chair, and I'm going to be like, oh, don't do that.
Of course not. This is not what I want.
This is not what I want at all. Oh, my God. Yeah, so this month we're talking about polyamory. So on this episode, we're going to have a really great interview conversation with Ruby Johnson, who is a sex therapist, open relationship coach, super cool person in the black and poly community, mad knowledgeable, mad woke.
Great. She's great.
This is an awesome conversation. Stick around for that. But before that, we have some segments. They are as follows.
Bay of the week.
Where we talk about people who we find attractive.
Hole of the week.
Where we shout you guys out, the homies, the listeners, and the stands.
Self-care tip of the week.
Where we give you some advice on how to take care of yourselves.
Pay it ho.
Where we beg for the money that we desperately, desperately need. And then we're going to go into our interview, which is a segment we like to call Fuck It.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising so we can see it, and the hashtag PodIn so other people can see it.
Yeah. And if you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show, we would love to do so. So please, to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com, which you can find in the description of this episode. What's our first segment?
Bay of the week.
So our bays of the week are these really cool people who run this newsletter called Salty. Salty is this podcast, but a newsletter form.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
and soon it's going to expand into just like Salty, which is just going to be like
salty
everything.
Salty for president.
Salty for president. Yeah. Salty clothes. Salty everything. It's going to be a household brand, and it's just amazing.
It's a sex, love, and dating newsletter for women, non-binary people, and trans folks.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
That's because we are Salty.
Yeah, exactly. And Salty is us. So very special shout out to Carice Henry, a super cool journalist who I've literally known since I was 9 years old, and I always knew she was going to be a bad bitch, and now she's a bad bitch. So I'm
she
just
literally
like,
is a bad
I knew,
bitch.
I knew from young that you were going to be a good one.
But yeah, she reached out to us to do a feature of us on in Salty. So we want you guys to head over to the link that you find in the description of this episode. Subscribe to Salty, because you can't read it unless you subscribe, because it's a newsletter. It's gonna come into your inbox, bro.
Check us out.
Yeah. Also shout out to Claire, who is the founder and CEO of Salty, and is also just like literally a bad bitch, like, I'm not gonna lie,
like literally she looks everyone good, was son. Beautiful today.
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. And then also a very special shout out to Jing Yu, who's a dope ass photographer who just made us look nice,
who's just
and
like,
was like playing
also,
Drake playing know? The good Drake songs. Yeah. Not the whack Drake songs, you know, sometimes sometimes Drake is whack. I was about to say sometimes whack is Drake.
Both.
Sometimes whack.
You weren't wrong either way.
Sometimes whack is Drake.
Very rarely, but yes, sometimes whack is Drake. And it's true.
Thank you for validating me. What's our next segment?
Hoe of the week. And who do we have?
We have fucking Diamond Sun, who...
Yo.
Yeah, I forgot to say on the last episode that we got to meet Diamond at Pod and Live NYC.
Diamond, you're amazing.
It's one of the best moments of my entire life, because I literally do love her. And she paid a hoe, like, a good amount of money this week.
And you blessed us, and it was beautiful, and we love you.
Yeah, bless up. Thank you so much. And then also a very special shout out to Cupcake Tellum, who is a cool hive. Shrug.
Hey.
I hate you. No, I don't hate you. I actually love you very much, but Cupcake was on Barry from Podcast in Color podcast called Podcast in Color, which is also a really good podcast. We were trying to like
so
just
meta.
Get tips of the trade. Yeah, it is really meta.
It's very meta.
It's all in color and it's all podcast. Nah, but definitely take a listen to Barry's show. But this week Cupcake Tellum was on as a guest and like spoke about us and shouted out the Kuhu Hive. And even though Kuhu is not here, We gotta still shout her out.
Akua's always here.
Yeah, we're all actually Akua Hive. Like, low
that's
key.
It.
Yeah. Me and Rodek are actually Akua Hive and Rob Hive. Yeah. We're not, like, it's ourselves. It's crazy because, Hive.
Like, it's not a joke. Like, we really are always Rob Hive or Akua Hive. Yes.
Well, self-care tip of the week. What's that?
It is you scrubbing gloves in the shower. You're laughing.
These are the shittiest stuff. Like, what's even happening
anymore? Let me
last
tell
week
you.
It was like, wash your hair. Like, what are you talking about?
First of all, that was like 4 weeks ago. You need to get another calendar. First of all, raise your hand if you don't use anything in the shower when you wash yourself. There are people raising their hands in the world.
Wait.
Now,
like, raise... niggas who don't use rags?
Nah, they just
you
use their
white
hands, son. Son, yo.
Shouts all the way.
All right. You listening right now who's not a white person, you know it's girl. You. All right, so now let me tell you, who's using a rag, right? What's a rag? There's no ridges on that
wait,
shit.
Nigga, it's were you a, not using a rag?
Listen, I was. I use a loofah. I use a loofah.
Okay,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Wow, you're just about to fucking straight up
flame you, boy.
Even though you sit your bare ass on toilet seats. I know you're not talking. Anyway, back to my topic. The look over in that corner is perfect. Back to my topic. Don't fucking play me. Anyway.
You gonna play me in front of my future husband like that? So like, you understand. To get married, he'll know. Son. Now he knows like what I do with my bare ass on the toilet. Like, would you still marry me? Damn. He's like,
yo,
nah.
He played it so
he's like,
safe.
He's like,
he
you're
was
a dirty
like,
bitch.
Nah, man.
He's
now
like,
I know.
Dirty bitch. Remember when Black Eyed Peas used to say that?
Dirty bitch. Oh my God. I'm so 2008. Anyway.
Yeah.
So like for me, rags are like mushy when they get wet, right? It depends.
That's what cloth does.
And then,
yeah.
Like, they're just, like, spreading the dirt around, you know? But if okay. You have these gloves, right? Because I got these fucking gloves.
Okay.
And, like, you're literally scrubbing, like, a brand new skin on you every day. And it's amazing. And you need to get them. Like, you think you're clean and you're not until you get these gloves.
Why are the gloves different from the rag?
So the like gloves the are made from like a germs. Different material altogether.
Okay.
And you know the same
Kevlar.
Thing.
Kevlar. They're made of vibranium.
Yes. They're nice. Please get vibranium gloves. No, they're different from they're a different material. I would say they're more scratchy is what I would say because they're not like cloth. It's more like, because I was going to say a scrub brush, but that's too rough.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a material that's more abrasive, yeah, than that. And like you're definitely cleaning yourself.
Mm.
Like, and I would recommend that for anybody who feels like it sucks, but like if you take a shower and it's like 2 hours later, you're like, why do I smell weird? Or why do I smell musty? Or why is like, especially in the summertime,
dirty
like
bit.
You're probably have like old skin.
Sorry.
You probably have like old skin or like caked up dirt or something like that because it's not easy to clean your fucking body, like, you know, especially
yeah,
when
especially with the soft ass
yeah
rag.
You know,
but like what about niggas who have eczema like me who don't want to use harsh ass rags?
Well, that's different. I do have dry skin myself and my skin like gets very I guess
sensitive
and yeah. Craggly. It actually feels better, like it feels like after I put lotion on it feels like the surface is more smooth and like I
I'm
did
gonna
something
blow up your spot because you don't use lotion, nigga.
No, first of all, I don't use lotion. I use lotion
where
it's
black people ever
where it's apparent. And I know I'm not the only fucking person who does this, so I'm not even ashamed.
I mean,
yo.
I won't call out the other person because they're not here
yeah,
to defend
not
themselves,
here, but
like, Akua don't use lotion either, son. Who the fuck are these bitches?
No,
stop
son.
Getting on me about this goddamn
me,
toilet
we,
seat
okay,
shit.
Okay, me and Akua are not alone. If you are one of the people who only lotion what's visible in the wintertime, be honest. Like, this is a safe space, and like,
this
I'm feeling very
space,
attacked
but I'm still
going
to roast your ass, boy.
And my sister's like, yo, like, she'll lift up her leg and she's like, you see me today, bro? And I'm like, yo, that's crazy. But, like, you shouldn't be proud of it. Don't be proud of it. Don't show that
no
around.
One in my household is ashy.
No one?
No one.
You're light-skinned, though. I always thought you guys just didn't lotion, to be honest.
Wow. This is racist now. This is fucked up. Whatever. Use your fucking scrubbing gloves.
Yo. And son, I'm giving y'all the keys right now, son. You will be smelling like a rose.
So Rodeka doesn't have enough money to buy lotion, so if you would like to help sustain this podcast monetarily, we really need it. So please to buy Rodeca some fucking lotion, go to Anakua, ashy ass niggas, go to Shea Butter, yeah, exactly, and coconut oil, anything. Come on, son. Can't be out there like that. Go to innerhomepricing.com.
I have the most moisturized face in the world, but I swear to you, the rest of my body is dying.
It's ashen. an ashen soul for an ashen hoe. Click on the tab, pay a hoe. You can also go to paypal.me/innerhoe, which is the same thing. You buy Redexum lotion, merchandise, okay. Merchandise where you can buy a hoodie to cover up your ash since you niggas are not out here fucking fine. Lotioning your bodies. And you can also use sponsor codes using previous and future episodes, because when you support our sponsors, you do support us. You can also now support a hoe on a monthly basis by subscribing to us on Patreon and receive perks while you're doing it. This is an easy way to throw some dollars monthly towards the show, because studios, transportation, and my future husband is not cheap. If you're able, and I'm going to stop bothering him now because it's like harassment at this point. If you're able and you'd be so kind, visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhoeuprising. You can donate $2, which will give you access to private IHU gatherings like the barbecue that we're doing this summer. And for the price of $5 a month, you can receive all that, as well as access to some exclusive behind the scenes video content, perfect for people who want to see Rodega's ashy ass face.
Yeah.
You can also donate less or more, so anything from $1 a month to $1 zillion a month. Anything is appreciated. This is just a more consistent way to pay a hoe, pretty much spending what you would for Apple Music, but to help your favorite hoes.
And speaking of support, like wanting to put a toilet seat cover on Sam's ass, want to help us out and
you
win
put
some
it on
free
the toilet
ass
seat.
Merch?
You don't even put it on my
no,
ass.
It needs to be on your ass, because everywhere you go, you are sitting bare-assed. Anyway,
I'm going to change my Twitter name to Bare-Ass Sam.
Please. I sit on toilet seat Sam. That's it.
Ask me anything. This is my TED Talk. You can do Reddit AMA.
Do you want to help us out and win some free IHU merch at the same damn time?
Yeah.
Of course you do. Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
We're running a special contest in spring. All you have to do to enter is rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. By doing this, you're helping us pop up on lists that Apple curates, because we're not on them already, and we should be. This
What's
will
up
help
with that? Is it because I sit on this?
I think it's primarily you, to be honest.
I fucked up.
This will help us also expose us to new listeners and sustain us in the long run.
Yes.
If you want to participate, it's easy. All you have to do is follow the link that will be in the description of this episode, then hit the purple subscribe button at the top of the page, scroll down the ratings and reviews, click the button, write a review, tap 5 stars, and then write, "Why does Sam like to sit on toilets in her bare ass?" And then finally hit send. We will randomly be selecting a winner who will be announced by the end of spring. So stay tuned.
The person who does that, like, spoiler alert, you will win the contest.
That's it.
Like, it's not randomized, obviously. Like,
we're not
we're
waiting
AI,
for
we're
that
not
one
Sophia
person to put
here.
That there.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to be like 5 people, and then we're going to be like, shit.
And then you won't win. Sorry, guys. Unoriginal. So bad. Let's get into the actual show now. We are going to go into our topic of the day, and we're talking to Ruby B. Johnson about polyamory.
Woo!
That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. She loves a party.
So this week, we're speaking to Ruby B. Johnson. Ruby is a licensed clinical social worker, sex therapist, open relationship coach, and founder of Poly Dallas Millennium, a symposium about consensual and ethical non-monogamy. Her areas of expertise are substance use disorders, obsessive and compulsive sexual behaviors, couples, gender expression / gender identity issues, consensual non-monogamous relationships, kink, BDSM, and many others. Happy to have you here.
Like, that's a lot of specialties.
Yeah,
you're amazing.
You're doing a lot.
Yeah.
So how did you get into being a social worker and then a sex therapist and then an open relationship coach?
Oh, now you're talking about 16 years of history there.
Hey, we're here
I dig
for
it. Yeah.
It's 16 years. I graduated with my BSW, my bachelor's in social work, in 2002. And so at first I wanted to be a licensed chemical dependency counselor. I'm in recovery. I have almost 19 years clean. And so I wanted to work with persons in recovery like myself. But when I went to school, someone told me that I want to broaden my learning base or my knowledge base, so I can kind of keep my portfolio diversified. And so that's how I got into social work. And then it just progressed along, and I became more and more fascinated with sexology and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And in the process of me working with a huge amount of folks across the socioeconomic, the ethnic, the various backgrounds, I pretty much came into folks that are in open relationships. Mm-hmm. And so that became fascinating to me. And in 2014, I decided to go into private practice, get out of the corporate world. And when I went into private practice, I pretty much sought to settle within the sexuality field.
And at that point, had you been into open relationships and polyamory and ethical non-monogamy?
Oh, baby, just dive right on in, right? Yes.
That is what we
do. That's a joke, a bad joke.
I mean, we're hoes, you know?
Yes. I am an open book. There is nothing that I won't talk about. And so I think in 2011, I met my first partner who is polyamorous. I had no clue what polyamory was, I knew the term open relationship, but he identified as polyamorous. And so it was kind of something that took me aback. I had all kinds of the misconceptions, the myths about polyamory. And so by the time I got into private practice, I was married, and I married my partner, and we met in the polyamorous community. So I was married about 2 years before I got into private practice.
And what kinds of, you had mentioned that you were like indoctrinated with those kinds of misconceptions. What kinds of misconceptions did you even have?
Oh my, I am so embarrassed when I think about it, but it's true. I had this misconception that folks who are in polyamorous or open relationships had an issue with commitment. I also thought that it was about, you know, men having excuses to cheat. I had this misnomer about the cleanliness of individuals who were in polyamorous relationship. I also thought it was a white folks thing, not a black folks thing. And those are just a few of them that I had.
That's something like, I'm just jumping around because we talk about polyamory a lot on this show. So I feel like our listeners are kind of like, they kind of get the lay of the land here, so we can kind of like jump around. But I guess, where did the change of your mindset happen in terms of thinking that polyamory was a white folks thing to like accepting it as a black folks thing? Which is like something that we're doing on this show, because I mean, I've hosted the show for 3 years and I've identified as polyamorous the whole time. Uh-huh. And that's different for people.
Right.
So where did you get into the realm of like, that's okay for black people to do? Like, this isn't like white folks' business.
Well, what actually happened was that's what my folks and my family, that's actually what they were doing, but they were not calling it polyamory. You know,
very
my
interesting.
Mom,
yes.
My mom was calling it, you know, freaky.
Hey. Yeah.
You know, you want a little something, something on the side, you know.
Yeah.
What they don't know. It's all kinds of iterations of it. But it was actually, if you want to put it into a concept that is universal, it was pretty much polyamory. So it shifted for me around the end of 2011 when I got away from that relationship and started to branch out on my own. And so a couple of years after that, I found the Black and Poly community. And then I found the Black Swinger community. And so it's like a whole community of Black folks that I'm kind of right in the center of now. And so it's like I didn't even know it as a segregated population, for lack of a better word. And so now the goal and the intent here in Dallas is for us actually to merge those communities. But there is some resistance, which is natural, which we can talk about now or later. But there is a huge resistance of folks within the Black and Poly community. It's a very protective community, because there's been a whole lot of stuff that's gone down here, going on down here in the South, you know, in Dallas, Texas. And so focusing on our own community and keeping that safe right now is a big part of what we're doing. Also, we are slowly introducing folks into our community that are not Black folks. You know, like we have a ethical non-monogamy meeting that happens every fourth Thursday, and it's inviting all communities together. And it's just been going on for a couple of months. And this past meeting had about, it was about 50-50, which was really cool.
Would you say the other 50% is white or just like non-Black?
I'm counting now in my head.
Just doing the live statistics.
We had a nice, I mean, yeah, I guess I can pretty much say, but that's not even fair to say. Let me put it this way. We had individuals who are Puerto Rican. We had some who were from Spain. That's actually their first language. We had some folks that were biracial. We had some individuals that were white, and we had some folks that are from Africa, and we additionally had some Black Americans. So I'm going to give you those breakdown of stats.
Yeah, that's a good breakdown, because ethnically diverse, because I mean, I feel like even there's just so much, my mind is going a million miles a minute, but even on the continent of Africa, we have those perceptions where it's like, you see like a man with several wives and things like that. So that's really interesting. So just to take it back a little bit.
We did go a little fast. You did touch a little bit about Dallas, and there's controversy with being like joining the communities. If you could elaborate on that, and then what your initiative is to even join the communities, all that, you can definitely elaborate on, because we want to hear about
it. Give us the tea, Ruby.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I can give you the tea of how. Can I cuss a little bit?
Of course.
This is called Interho Uprising, and my favorite word is fuck. My second favorite word is
fuck. Okay, so let me tell you how I fucked up. Oh. I went into it kind of like, Ruby, let's all just get along. You know, that was my mentality, and that shit didn't work. And so when I went into it, there's like 13 leaders of the polyamorous communities here in Dallas. And the reason that there's 13 leaders is because when someone gets pissed off, they start another group. And so we have like these little 13 groups around Dallas, and we have one Black and Poly group that's in Dallas. And that Black and Poly group is actually that actually includes the swinging and the poly community together. And so I brought those leaders, which is two, and with 10 other leaders, which are all white. And I said, okay, so there's one person who is biracial. And I said, so let's have a conversation about, you know, what's going on. How can we join these communities together? So on my phone, I got a very nice phone call from the leader in the Black community who says, you know, you should have had a conversation with me before you started this, because there is this idea of, okay, are we being used to show that your community is diverse, or are you interested sincerely in us being together and building a community? And so that is the disconnect that's going on. And so with that being said, here in Dallas is a liberal city when it comes to certain areas, but when it comes to social areas, it's not very liberal. It's very conservative. It's full of churches, not to say that anything about Christianity, but there is a certain, you know, value system that comes along with it that is very conservative. But mind you, my client base has a lot of folks in the Black church that are polyamorous, but they don't talk about that.
And that's so, quite interesting.
Not surprising, yeah. But interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I see a whole lot of, there's only two Black sex therapists in the Dallas area.
That is also quite interesting. Yeah.
And so I have pretty much my client base is Black folks. And I love it like that. I'm not trying to change it. Okay, so... And so that is the main thing, is there's a lack of trust. And this lack of trust isn't based upon the usual stereotype. It's actually based upon some real life behavior that has gone down within the last decade. So I do want to toss that out.
What is this behavior exactly?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot. Okay.
No,
you ain't putting me on the spot. I'm being funny. I have bad jokes.
No, that's okay. That's me,
actually. We just want to make sure we're, you know, that's
people don't know when I'm serious or not.
That's actually me. Like, is Sam being sarcastic?
Yeah, I never
probably
know.
Yeah.
And so some of the behaviors includes, you know, fetishes. You know, people love to fetishize the Black community. They have this curiosity about, ooh, I wonder what it's like over there on that side of the world. Let me go and dibble dabble, but I'm going to run back to the safety. It's just, it's kind of a crossover within the kink community. There's a lot of crossover between poly and kink, BDSM. And so that's really, really thick and rich within this community when it comes to Mexican Americans, when it comes to Puerto Ricans, you know, the Latinx community and the Black American community. That fetishized position, because there is more in the forefront, those communities that are white. And when you have to actually find our community, and the reason being is that it's a whole lot of, you know, bad behavior historically.
That's an interesting thing about just society in general, and kind of like just trying to navigate as a Black sexual human being, mm-hmm. especially when you do touch into kink, because we have things like dom and sub situations. And it's like, mm-hmm. what does being a Black sub really mean? When you're like, you have been in a subservient role in this Ooh. Country. Yeah. Mm.
Yep.
Spicy stuff to think about. But can you kind of just paint a picture of what the, maybe specifically in Dallas, but what the Black poly community even looks like? Like, who's a part of it? What kinds of ideals? How do folks meet? How do folks communicate?
Fun, love, and they have Aww. Something going on every weekend that yes. kind of wears me out. They're like, are you going to the casino? I'm like, oh, Lord, I got to be home sometime. I mean,
yeah.
We believe in celebration. There's no stick up our asses. And let me just put it that way. And there's a party on the weekend in somebody's hotel, you know, so we like to have fun, right? And we create an environment where fun can be had. Also, we're very incestuous, you know, even more so than our white counterparts, because it's about 70 of us who are in the Dallas area who are very active. Now, there's hundreds of us that are part of the swing and poly community, but those 60 to 70 are pretty much curated by Teresa Love. She's kind of built the Dallas and the Houston communities. And so she is pretty much a mama hen, like that matriarchal lead. I'm telling you, our communities is like a big tribe, a big village. You know, everyone's kids know each other. You know, they go to church together. Very hedonistic. I love them. And you know, and so that's what it looks like. Now, with that being said, there's still a whole lot of infighting that can happen because people are not being honest. But I think that's with any polyamorous community.
What kinds of things are folks not being honest about?
Ooh, my wife said it's okay if I go out on a date with you, when the wife don't know what the hell's going on. Or my boyfriend said that I can have this, you know, this nice group sex moment with you. He don't mind, but he really don't know. And so that kind of stuff.
Not good. So that's interesting how that's even playing out, because I feel like within the polyamorous community, like there's this big focus on
communication,
honesty, openness, communication. What's going on?
Where are these
ideals breaking down and why?
This is a great conversation. And how I see it is this: there's a whole lot of veil of secrecy that is just ingrained within human relationships when it comes to matter of sexuality and love. We are so afraid of the word sex and this culture and the what I mean, it's like you have to clutch your pearls and go, oh my goodness, when you hear the word sex. And that veil of secrecy can also carry on even into the most sex positive communities. It still happens. It's just that fear that this is not really going to be approved of, so let me lie about it.
Where do we fix that? Yeah, how do we fix that?
Because you would think in the polyamorous community, like, that's where we're addressing these issues. Yeah. Like, let's actually put it on the table by saying,
like, hey, you know, this is what I want to do.
Open
but
and honest.
It seems like it's breaking down there too. What advice do you give? What do you do?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things is I'm a huge believer in mentorship. And so with mentorship, I mean, you know, I'm in my 40s, not to say that, you know, I'm so far gone, I can't be helped, but literally we're so far gone, we can't be helped.
Oh, don't do that.
And so our kids who are being raised in polyamorous households, there's a lot more of them, a lot more that are out and open. That particular generation, also our 20 somethings and our 30 somethings, you know, they are coming up into an opportunity to actually not have so much vile stuff. I'm just taking this really to a whole nother level, but not to have so much vile stuff that is infused within their idea of a relationship structure, those sexual scripts that we have going on in society. So that's my hope right there.
As a person who's been doing this since 2002, you said, or 2012?
Since 2011.
So yeah, about 7 years now. Had you kind of come into these situations where you felt uncomfortable to communicate, or have you like made mistakes along the way?
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. A lot of mistakes. I still make them. If I get real honest, you know, I mean, human beings are going to fall short. Right. And so I don't put myself on any type of pedestal. You know, we have someone who actually is doing a workshop at Poly Dallas Millennium about poly sainthood, this myth that there's this epitome of what a polyamorous person looks like, how they're supposed to behave. They're supposed to be void of jealousy and all of this bullshit. And it's not true. It's not true. And so, for me personally, the way that I have learned the most, and it has actually stuck with me without being shamed about it, is if I'm in a relationship with folks who don't have an unrealistic expectation of me. So purposely and with intention, I surround myself with folks who don't have an unrealistic expectation of me. Now, I'm with an amazing partner who he just lets me run wild.
Love it. The best kind.
Goals.
Yeah. I am a feral individual. I am hedonistic. I know I am. I love women the most of all.
Same.
And he understands that. You know, he understands that wonderfully, and I really appreciate that. I am a person who is polyamorous. I really don't live the polyamorous lifestyle, and that's another one that bugs me a whole lot. In the sense of, I know earlier I used how long have I been practicing polyamory, but I am a polyamorous person who has polyamorous relationships. It's not a lifestyle. I don't go back and forth, bounce back and forth. And I think that's one of the misconceptions that folks have, is that this, for some people, this is not necessarily a choice, but it's more of who they are.
A sexual orientation.
Yes, absolutely. And more and more and more, I'm starting to align, because the research is actually showing that being polyamorous is actually an orientation, and also being monogamous. Some people are just not built to be in a polyamorous relationship. Now, they can dibble and dabble, and so I don't begrudge that for anyone. I'm not this person who looks down on you if you are a monogamous individual who prefers monogamous relationships. I don't shame you for that. And don't shame me for my shit on this side.
Right, right. You know? Can you talk a little bit more about like what the research is showing? Because this is actually a conversation we had on the last episode, and I was just like, the science will tell, but I wasn't sure exactly what the science is. So what is the science showing in terms of...
There is so much out there. So there's probably about 15 ongoing projects right now, and I'm on one of them as it relates to polyamorous families. But with the stuff that has been completed, most of it is looking at the demographics of people and some of the cross sections of folks growing up, their childhood, their adulthood. And so it's kind of looking at that descriptive nature of individuals. And what that research is showing is that we need more done in the area of this as a sexual orientation, because they have it in kink, and BDSM is a lot more rich and robust in that community. And so some of the studies that are actually published now are tremendous. When I say tremendous, you know, 20 to 30 is a whole lot for this new one. And so there's a lot more that's coming out and building upon it.
Any idea or hypothesis as to why kink and BDSM studies are more, expansive than polyamory studies?
Well, I mean, if we think about it, right, though polyamorous has been practiced, it wasn't until the 80s and even the early 90s that people actually start having those conversations in mainstream. And so if you think about kink and BDSM, I mean, those conversations have been had for a couple of like 3 or 4 decades prior to that. And so that, in my humble opinion, and in talking to many folks, that is one of the reasons that polyamory is not as rich in the literature or the research studies, and also looking at the best ways of treating and providing therapy for those populations.
And that kind of leads to another question I have, because, I mean, in the history of marriage, which is already like an interesting concept, because was marriage really for love, or was marriage really for like contractual purposes? And we've seen multi-loving marriages in different populations across the world for all of time. Where did the breakdown kind of happen where we just even shifted to monogamy as a mainstream in society?
Chattel slavery. I'm just going to get real.
Whoa.
Okay.
Tell us. Ruby getting woke.
You know, and that's immediate it. Too. Yeah. It's when the human experience and the body became commodified, right? And as a woman, and I'm talking about in American history, and this can also trace back even further, but in American history, the woman was considered, sometimes is considered property. And so that was part of how someone showed their wealth, and more so they showed their wealth by having children. And so that kind of counted with taxes and all of this. And so the purpose for having a wife, if we think about it with monogamy is something that is utilitarian in its makeup and what it looks like, and in its belief systems, is something that is very patriarchal. Absolutely. It is something that is viewed, women are viewed as second class citizens who are not bestowed the same rights as men. And so now I'm not even going to take it to black women, okay, because I can take it there.
That's black women. This is a show for black women and non-binary people, so we would love if you take it there.
Oh, shit. Okay, so when you think about the black woman, right, and during chattel slavery times, she was basically a breeder and someone that you experimented upon. And so she was there to satisfy the will of whom the slave master was. She was also there to have children, take care of, you know, some of the domestic duties. And additionally, she was experimented upon. And when I talk about that, I'm talking about these gynecological instruments that we have currently today. Have you read the book Medical Apartheid?
No.
Okay, read it. It actually talks about everything that I'm talking of, and I'm too excited to articulate it. But if you read that book, it actually talks about where the myths about folks, black folks' tolerance of pain comes from. And it was people, these fucking, lack of a better word, scientists were experimenting on black women. And some of the stuff that they wrote down was that, you know, a black woman has a higher tolerance of pain. You know, she can do this. We can actually have these experiments upon her. And some of these women were laying down on the floor just infected. And these are actually literal notes from the people who did the experiments. And so that was the service of a woman and who she is, which is basically an utilitarian object. And so as we shift away from that for non-binary femmes and that role of being, this is what your expectation is, that is being broken. And marriage doesn't even have as much of a need as it used to have. It's like, what the hell are we married? I married because I needed insurance. That's why, right, I married. I didn't plan on getting married. I didn't need to get married.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I had my own money, my own life. My mom is she taught me a whole lot. She's like, baby, you always have your backup bank account. You never rely. But my mama really did say that. But I'm not going to be as cavalier and say that I don't need folks. But my dependency for the reasons such as finances, you know, someplace to live, I was able to unchain myself from those expectations and those actual needs to be with someone. Now it's purely to the best of my ability by choice that I'm with you. And I don't say, hey, I don't need you, but I do say, hey, I really want to be with you and I desire to be with you. But let's not get it twisted. I'm not going to be abused.
Right. Yeah. Can you even like delve into that even more? Like what kinds of shifts did you see in your life as you adopted polyamory in your relationships?
It's been a liberation movement within myself and within my world. Yes. It's been a revolution. And when I say a revolution, it's been an overthrow of government. And that's the best way that I can describe it. You know, the things that drove me before was all the chatter from my daddy, you know, from all of the previous relationships that I've had, from all of the sexual abuse, from all of the rapes, and from the active addiction. I had a whole lot of chatter and a whole lot of belief systems that kept me imprisoned. And so once I got into the polyamorous world, I fell in love with the community before anything. And so once I got into the community, this exposure to a sexual freedom, and sexual freedom for me is not just about the mechanics of sex. It's about the being of me being a person that is moving and and interacting within her space and her environment? And how do I do that with confidence? And how do I do that without, how do I do that unapologetically? And so that is part of the liberation that I receive, because there is such an opportunity for exploration. And I didn't have that before. All of my exploration was dictated to me. Now I had an opportunity to actually go and explore myself. And I'm still exploring. I'm still having a good time. And that's, to me, one of the gifts, is that I don't get bored. The reason I don't get bored is because I don't stay still too long. No, I'm playing.
Always at these casinos.
No, but it's very exciting because, you know, as I get older, I mean, I'm 45 now, and I'm getting ready to come up on 50. And there's a lot of conversations now for me about sexuality as one gets older, and how people don't see older people as sexual beings and as sexual persons who actually have still a skin hunger or an emotional hunger. You know, we are still wanting to, you know, have novelty and excitement. You know, I had experienced that femdom world where I was actually getting paid to do some things. And that was the most beautiful, exciting experience of my life, just to reclaim my body, because it had been violated for so long, and for me to actually reclaim it and to say, okay, this is when you can touch me. You know, consent actually became a sexuality for me. I created the term consent sexual. And that's what I am. I am a consent sexual.
Earlier, we had talked about like the fact that some people are polyamorous by nature, as the science is showing, and some people are monogamous by nature. Would you suggest that people who feel that they are monogamous kind of like dip and dab into polyamory, or at least take some of the tenets that polyamorous people follow? Because it seems like it would be beneficial, like at the very least, like the open communication, the owning yourself, the your pleasure first type things.
I'm glad you asked that question, because, and I don't recommend this for everybody, but for some people it does work, that when there's issues with fidelity in a monogamous relationship, people will come in and go, you know, I don't care. And I've heard this a lot. I don't care that my partner had sex with X, Y, and Z. It's that I care they didn't tell me that they did. And so it's the honesty piece that is driving people more than anything. I don't know if this is an evolution or people are just more comfortable talking about it, but the physical act of sex is really not that big a deal for some people anymore. And I'm finding it, I don't know if it's just the group that I work with within my practice, but I'm finding that a lot of my colleagues are actually talking about this. So when you say, do they borrow from it? And I think it's not necessarily borrow, but maybe people who are polyamorous are actually modeling that honesty can actually do a whole lot for a relationship. It doesn't have to be so stifling and so restricted because people are so scared.
Just want to bounce around a little bit more into your personal life and then going over towards your practice. But you had mentioned just like the family aspect and kind of raising kids within a polyamorous relationship. Is that something that you personally do?
No, I don't. I cannot have children, and it was because I had an emergency hysterectomy when I was 38 years old. But now the idea of motherhood is more realistic in the sense of I can meet a mate or meet a partner and they have children, and I can love and nurture, and it's not confined to me biologically having a child. And to me, that is the most, I'm about to start crying, but because that is the most beautiful experience that I think I have had as being a polyamorous person. is the idea of motherhood, is as something that is intentional and not limited. And for a lot of clients that I have worked with, and when I say a lot of clients, I'm talking like, you know, about 15, 20 clients that I have worked with have been individuals who cannot biologically, you know, give birth to a child, but they are actually able to, you know, be with their partner, and their partner, you know, meet someone, and they're able to, you know, have children, and they can still have that experience. And so there's actually movement with contracts, and, you know, we're moving towards more parents rather than just two parents that have a say within a child's life. And this is, I'm hoping, the new frontier when it comes to family structures, that they're not so limiting as what they used to be, and we're actually able to have more.
This is actually taking the adage, it takes a village to raise a child, yeah, and like putting it into practice, which I think is so beautiful. One, yeah, just for like the sake of love, but then also
economics.
Couple of people with some good financial situations raising a child is a better situation than two people, honestly.
Absolutely.
So to go back into your practice, since we've like bounced, yeah, all the way up in your life, we spilled all the tea that could be spilled. What does your practice look like as a sex therapist? Like, what kinds of services do you provide for your clientele?
My practice, I have a few specialities, mm-hmm, and my specialities are around female-bodied and also feminine-leaning individuals, and it's centered around looking at how one can develop their sexuality and move from a place of sexual assault and sexual abuse to actually sexual empowerment. I also work with individuals who have different desiring, you know, that have desire discrepancies, which actually teaching some individuals, including, I mean, within lesbian couples, within mainly lesbian couples, this is really ironic, in that taking a look at not falling into that idea of being a roommate, and looking at sexuality as something that can evolve and remain interesting, and you have a lot more creativity with it. I mean, even with certain couples and certain, you know, triads or certain quads, there's still this limited idea of what sexuality is. And so my practice is about broadening that idea. And also, I work with individuals who are questioning their gender identity, and their gender expression, and what that looks like. And also individuals who have had confirmation surgery, and they are wanting to, you know, how can I have an orgasm now? You know, and we look at different tools and different ways to, I'm trying not to be too explicit, but I think I can.
Go for it. Again.
different ways that, you know, they can experience it. You know, some individuals, they find that they have certain kinks that are necessary for them to reach orgasm. You know, and some of that can be a diaper fetish, or they need to be bound in some type of way, or, you know, just different techniques and different things that they like to do.
Would you say that, would you recommend, if possible, because obviously everyone doesn't have access to therapy, but would you say in the ideal world that, like, in the ideal world where we can actually access therapy, but still this world, this fucked up world that we live in, would you say, uh-huh, that, would you say that it would be like beneficial to all people to kind of undergo some sort of sex or relationship therapy?
Not necessarily therapy, just, you know, coaching, or always don't be so cavalier and arrogant that you, what you learned when you were 10 years old about sex is still working at 40.
Yep.
You know, just grow.
Can't be Cinemax porn for the rest of your life.
Right.
That's not. Right.
You know, now porn is good, but, mm-hmm, you know, there's a lot of, never mind. But
nope, say it.
Yes.
We're hearing you.
Oh my God. Have y'all Have y'all been looking at some of the queer porn films? I can't even think of the word right now. I get excited and I kind of lose my train of thought. And so there is some beautiful artwork that is coming out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we've seen it.
Yeah.
We're right here.
Especially
with you.
Rebecca over here. Yeah, she's a queer porn connoisseur, actually.
Oh my gosh. It's just some phenomenal work that is being done that is so erotic.
I want to delve into a little bit like the con going that you do. I think on your website you call yourself a sex geek or a sex nerd. And that you like kind of like attend all these cons and stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about that part of yourself.
Okay, it's Black Sex Geek. Mm-hmm. That's my my handle, for lack of a better word. Basically, I geek out on sexuality, and you know, Audre Lorde is my. I think I worship her, Audre Lorde, and so just the erotic is something that I'm on constant search for improving and building my personal concept of the erotic. And so I go to a lot of conferences, and I go to those conferences because of the knowledge base and also the exchange of ideas and learning new things. And what I have found is that a lot of those spaces do not they're not spaces that I can relate to, or I have a voice, or I can see people that look like me and I can understand what they're talking about. So that is the reason that Poly Dallas Millennium came along. And so Black Sex Geek and Poly Dallas Millennium kind of evolved together in the same space and on the same plane and in the same realm. And so it's a huge extension of what I see as relationships and how they need to be catered to and talked about and discussed, and also how, you know, family comes into it, because it is a family-oriented event before 5 o'clock. After 5, you better put those kids away. And that's what it's about. It's actually about me kind of playing catch up in my life of stuff that I wish I would have knew back then, and kind of like, how can I make sense of it all with all of that chaos and confusion for what I can do to help people now and going forward.
And when did you found Poly Dallas?
In 2015. It's in its fourth year. Mm-hmm. And I founded it as an event for professionals to learn about ethical non-monogamy, because I was getting clients who said, hey, I went to this therapist, or it took me three therapists to find you. You know, I'm tired of teaching people, or I'm tired of going into a therapist's office with one issue and they want to make it about polyamory, but no one ever came.
After you founded it, now that like it's in the fourth year, what has the reaction been like from folks in attendance?
Very positive. There's a quote that I always like to use, and it's from Kevin Patterson. Mm-hmm. And Kevin says, when I go to other conferences, I am Black and Poly. But when I go to this conference, I'm just Poly, you Aww. Know? And he's like, because he's not the only one there. It's like 60% folks of color at the event, compared to like a Woodhull or a Catalyst Con, where it's maybe 15-20% folks of color.
And can we talk about the importance of even being with folks of color while discussing polyamory? Because I guess the unminded person would just say, well, it's just, that's a sexual orientation, or that's a relationship orientation. So why does it matter that we're of the same race?
Pablo Freire, right? I am a huge fan of critical pedagogy, and Paulo talks about how us as individuals, we are facing the oppressor, right? And it's not necessarily about a particular oppressor. It says about oppression overall that we're challenging. And there's something about being in the same space to have that critical thought on how to overcome that same space with individuals who have a shared knowledge in social constructs, like what are those things that are oppressive for us, and how can we speak in a language and voice that can help us as a people to face it? I mean, because sexual health, polyamory, relationships, all of that within folks of color, it's a social justice issue, you know, and I'm a social justice lover. Anyone, you can meet any of my 20, 30 partners I'm playing.
Hey, love it.
Yeah, you know, I am a slut, but you can meet any of them. And I will tell you, you know, to me, power dynamics and looking at those particular nuances within relationships, the economics, the ableism, looking at all of that within relationships is so important, because those isms can easily seep into a relationship that you have that is already one political identity, and you bring a whole plethora of more. It's very important that you're able to have conversations about how to navigate that and work through it.
Have you ever been in such a situation? Like, have you been in a relationship with a white person?
Oh, example? My husband's white.
Dun, dun, dun. And how are these dynamics playing out, if at all? Like, what kinds of work do you guys go through to deal with that?
Oh my gosh. We have to actually, this last year has been really tough for us, is because we've been in therapy talking about white supremacy in our relationship. And the reason that it came up, and I just call it what it is, and the reason that it came up is because at last year's Poly Dallas, there was some behavior where, you know, he was basically trying to, you know, usurp some of my decision making when, you know, this is my baby. Not that I'm territorial, but I'm territorial, you
yeah,
know.
And like, so I mean, this is a space, this is a yeah. carefully crafted space for a reason.
Say that, right? And then so he was coming in there, and I said, okay, white man, can the other folks talk? Oh my God, that caused some shit. And so.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And so we have a very honest relationship, and that's what I love, you know, and I love that we're able to have these, you know, challenges to shit that he may not even realize that he had. And I get to challenge myself and Ruby, where is your voice in this particular situation? And so we actually go around and we do a workshop about the isms in relationships, and it's called, you know, polyamory makes strange bedfellows. And so it's actually, you know, talking about how we can sometimes lay up close and against somebody that we may not realize that there's this issue going on and brewing inside of them that can be internal. I mean, and this has happened on many levels with many different groups. And I'm finding that, you know, for me, it happens more with the male-bodied, masculine-leaning individuals. Not that I'm stereotyping, but...
Men are trash, as they say.
Yeah. That's our
second caption
on the
Sam
show.
Sam said it, not me.
I am politically neutral.
Yeah, I mean, once again, like, the fact that all people, whether monogamous or polyamorous, can kind of pull from these things, because in all relationships, you're going to have some sort of power dynamics that mm-hmm. reflect this oppressive ass society that we're in. So to look at those, I think that's super, super important. So to go back to your practices, you also provide open relationship coaching, What does that look like?
Open relationship coaching is basically for those individuals who just need skills building. Those folks who are new into an open relationship, you know, and it's really about how do we shift from monogamy to non-monogamy? How do we revamp those coping and communication skills that may have worked in monogamy, but they're not going to work in non-monogamy? You know, there's a shift in not only a paradigm, but also it's a shift in a lot of ways of being and communicating and working through things in an open relationship. And it's not polyamory that kills relationships. It's that shift in paradigm that does, because we want to take that structure within a relationship that we have, and we want to meld an open relationship or polyamory around that, rather than just saying, okay, I need to scrap that and start with something new over here. That's where that coaching needs to happen. And we need to allow each one of our partners to have that space to go through it, because there's usually someone who is more zealous and energetic and wants to go forth quickly than the other person. And so it's about how can they both go through as a couple, or if you're solo polyamorous, you know, how can you navigate, you know, being within a world of someone who is a solo polyamorous and not being viewed as someone's unicorn or plaything. And, you know, how can you let other people know this is who I am? It's not anything against you, but this is just how I operate, mm-hmm. all of that.
And similar to the question I asked before, do you think that this is something that's necessary that people undergo who are even stepping into polyamory or open relationships or some sort of like ethical non-monogamy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do believe that if we're going into something different with the same information that we had, it's going to be issues. So yep. It's time to get new information for a new situation.
And does that need to be... Becca's over here snapping. No, I totally agree, because I've been in that position. Do you think that that needs to be with another person who's like guiding you through it, or can it just be like, oh, let's just read Ethical Slut together, you know, or something like
shit.
That?
Oh, shit. Okay. Yes, you have to read more than... Because Ethical Slut is about ethics and, you know, how to have sex ethically, you know, but when we want to talk about polyamory, this is me in my opinion, mm-hmm. you know, and just take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then so there's other books that I like to recommend for clients to read, mm-hmm. and there a lot of them are about from queer writers, you know, like Rewriting the Rules, Jealousy for the Queer Woman, I think that's the name of it. And so there's a whole lot of books that I do like to, you know, gender and sexuality, sexual fluidity. Yeah, and so those are those types of books. But to me, reading a book is one thing, but that's an adjunct to something else. And I do believe there's something about the live experience, because theory and practice are two different things. And so what you get in books is theoretical, but what you get in practice, like with other support groups, you know, or online groups, or a relationship coach, and be careful about the coach that you go to. Just because you've been poly for 2 years does not make you a coach.
How does one even like find the proper coach? Like, how do you discern who's the right person?
I highly recommend going to a vetted database like CAP, you know, Kink Aware Professionals, but it's more than just kink, with NCSF, or, you know, open relationship. I can't think of it now. You can go to my website. You can see all of them.
This is a question specifically from Akua, who you'd been in heavy communication with, and Akua is the person who found you in the first place. And Akua seems to want to become a Kink Aware Professional, but also wants to know exactly what that entails. So we're asking this question specifically for her and her mental health trajectory. As a therapist.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Akua wants to be you, Ruby.
Well, you can tell Akua to come to Dallas. I'll buy a plane ticket on plan.
Fly Akua out 2018.
So a kink aware professional is someone who is most of the time a practitioner, and also someone who offers a certain educational or knowledge base. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I said it's more than someone who's just, you know, practiced for a few years. I mean, there are some individuals who are very savvy. You do not need a degree necessarily, but that degree says a whole lot. You know, so it's kind of like a double-edged sword. And so what that means is an individual who has a knowledge base, experience, sex positive, affirming, understanding of certain relationship structures, you know, be it polyamorous, be it kink, BDSM, be it a combo of both, you know, be it power dynamics within a relationship overall, you know. And so that's that type of individual. And so when I go onto a database like CAP or someplace that actually wants to vet you before you join their database, and they're really, really solid and very, very, you know, intentional about who they allow on it, because it is about safety for people. You know, when I go on that, I have a lot more confidence than when I go to Psychology Today. So in finding someone, word of mouth is something that's really important. And if you want to be a good consumer for yourself and who you pick and choose, look at Google reviews, because mm-hmm. people are vicious. look at, you know, other professionals, ask who they recommend, talk to friends, who do you recommend? So word of mouth is the biggest one.
And just to get like a picture of what the terrain looks like for kink aware professionals, how common are folks who are doing what you do in, I guess, this country?
Very few and far between, because there are people who say, oh, I work with that. Oh, I do that. And they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Right. Those are the people that damage and harm folks, because that is very irresponsible. Don't practice outside your scope.
And I guess then where does that leave other people? So I'm not sure how many, I guess, Americans are turning to or looking for kink aware professionals. But is there a shortage of you folks out there?
Yes, there is. And there is a shortage of sex therapists, period. Because it is a knowledge base, and it is, I paid a lot of money for this education. And people say, well, your degree, that's because you don't have those letters behind your name. Okay, I can get with that. But when someone pays $40,000 for those letters behind their name, I'm damn sure going to be pissed off if you come in, you know, and because there is, it is a skill set and an ethic level. All of that is attached to it. So looking for someone who has some level of education, and it could just be an educator, you know, a sex educator could come in and do it. Someone like you on this show probably has more knowledge base than about 60% of the students in grad school right now. Just because you are around and you are getting experience from other people, just have some evidence that you're doing something.
I guess my next question is, how do we make the terrain better? Like, how do we get more folks into sex therapy in the first place?
I think that we have a whole lot of people who are therapists. I don't think we have a shortage of therapists. We have a shortage of specialized therapists. And there's a huge difference, because when I was in grad school, no one told me about polyamory. No one told me about kink. When I got out of grad school, I didn't have any knowledge of anything like this. And so what I had to learn was that probably 90% of what I do in my office, I learned after grad school, out on my own, getting my own education, getting my own certifications. And so how we improve it, I think, is that we go to that base level of what we have in grad schools, you know, because right now I'm working on the kink professional policy or guidelines for the American Psychological Association. And so we're actually creating these guidelines on what someone who is a new practitioner, what they need to understand and know about being kink aware, and someone who is currently like a nurse or a doctor, what they need to know to be aware. And so those types of projects are created by individuals like me who knows that people are actually killing people. They're doing some messed up stuff. And so understand, if you don't know, refer out. It's okay. People are so greedy and so fearful of not having money. They want to just take on and not know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be like more self-accountability in all fields in this country. But yeah, definitely when like lives are on the line, that's an important thing to keep in mind. We're going to switch into some questions from our listeners, if that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. All right. So the first question we have is from Instagram user Haziba. And Haziba writes, what is a reasonable boundary and a boundary placed out of insecurity? So, for example, they're having issues in understanding like whether or not their partner is basically asking their partner not to sleep with an ex or any of their friends, and they're wondering if that's a reasonable boundary or is that a boundary that's placed out of insecurity, and how do you even navigate that space?
Oh man, that's an interesting question, and that's more of a question for her in the sense of what is the intent behind setting that boundary. You know, is it that you don't want your boyfriend to, you know, shit where they eat? You don't want it too close to you? Or is it that someone has burned you in the past? Or is it simply that you don't want your girlfriends knowing what's going on there with your... I mean, so there's... And I'm not mad at them for anything, you know? And that's up to her and saying, is this realistic for her and her relationship? Is her partner pushing back on it? Do they not want to do it? Are they the ones who have the complaint, or is she second guessing her boundary? You know, and if you're second guessing your boundary and what you're stating, the thing is, you can set the boundary and kind of figure it out. You know, is this something that is a real big deal to me, or is it something that, you know, I really want to keep within my life? But those questions and those explorations are things that no one can necessarily say yes or no to this, because this isn't a yes or no response.
Sometimes I feel like, or when I was kind of like exploring my personal polyamory, I felt like I should feel bad or guilty about sending some boundaries because I wasn't being like the right kind of polyamorous.
Oh, that's bullshit right there. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, any good open relationship coach will tell you this: having a whole lot of rules and regulations or whatever is not unusual for someone new to polyamory. The reason being is that those need to be set to kind of learn to maneuver through this. The older you get in this, and being a polyamorous person, it's kind of like you'll let those training wheels off and you'll start riding on a 10 speed where you don't need, you know, just give yourself a fucking break. Yeah. You know, this is new and this is different. And be you. Have your partner understand that some of this is about you, and don't try to take you too fast, you know, because this is natural. It's natural to have this kind of, I want to hold on to you tight, suffocating kind of rule set.
Yeah. I mean, you're unlearning a whole thing that you've been indoctrinated with for your entire life. And then all of a sudden switching, it's hard. That was so validating to hear you say that. Thank you so much. Our next question is from Ayana. And Ayana's first question is, how do you combat jealousy?
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I'm not Ayana. I think you're, that's an awesome question. I have to wash my filter. And combating jealousy is not something necessarily that you can do. It's more about how do you manage your emotions, you know, and take a look at what is triggering me? What am I being reactive to? It's a whole lot of self-analysis, because usually a trigger comes from someplace, and that reactivity is something different than a response. You know, the reactivity, you need to have some vulnerability to temper and make it a response and figure out what that is about. You know, what is it? Can your partner help you in this? Can your partner, you know, are they not being transparent enough for you? And there's a difference between being transparent and being integrated, you know, and just kind of figure out what is going on that you're having this jealous feeling, and how are you managing it? What are you doing with it? Is it something that you can change within you? Is it something to change within your relationship? Or is something that your partner needs to offer you more affirmation with?
And Ayana's second question kind of ties into that, and that so Ayana's having the issue with the balance in that I think maybe they want to share more with their partner about exactly what they're doing with other folks, and their partner might be less hesitant to share. So how do you kind of like strike that balance in between who's saying what?
It's about, it may be different. You know, your partner may want to know less or more, and you may need to know less or more. Mm-hmm. It's more about, you know, meeting each other where they're at and mm-hmm. meeting their needs. I'm a more of an equitable access person than an equal access because you and me are different people.
Yes.
Our needs may not be equal, mm-hmm. but do I have equitable access to what I need? Now that's the conversation to have. Yeah. And so whomever needs whatever, as long as the partner is willing to help them to be safe and secure within the relationship, that's where the growth happens.
Yeah.
When people want to put these arbitrary, self-righteous limitations of, you want to know too much about my relationship, where is my autonomy and agency? No, motherfucker, where is your accountability within this relationship that we come in together?
So that I love it
so much.
You're
truth.
Speaking a lot of truth.
Woo!
This is not a question that somebody specifically asked, but this is kind of something that pops up a lot, just in like the accountability and stuff like that. So there is this thing where a lot of cisgender straight men kind of use the guise of polyamory to kind of just take it and do whatever the fuck they want without caring for their partner. Do you have any like takes on that?
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh man, you know, I call that kind of predatory, and I use extreme language a lot, but to me language conveys the gravity, is that the right word I'm looking for, of the situation. And so that aspect of having people be a means to an end under the guise, like you say, of this is what polyamory looks like, to me, I find that insulting and irresponsible. And if I know that someone is doing that, you know, us as a community, sometimes we have to hold each other, you know, to the fire and say, hey, And are we afraid to do that? You know, is that something that we feel that, because someone has to change something, you know, and therapy, if you find a couple who's in a toxic feedback loop, as a therapist, I go in and I try to disrupt that feedback loop so that some shift and some change can happen. And sometimes, you know, when individuals are exploiting or, you know, being predators, or they're doing things that are harmful within a community, someone's going to have to come in and say, you know, this isn't going to work. It's kind of like that, you know, that Me Too, the Me Too movement, which I am just like, you know, to me, that's a whole nother level of how we can keep each other accountable. You know, it may to be to a certain extreme, but somewhere, someplace, someone has to speak up and say, this shit is not okay.
We have one last question from Hood Fairy 99. And maybe this is a show that you haven't seen, but have you seen Spike Lee's Netflix rendition of She's Gotta Have It?
Yeah, I wrote an article on it. Yeah.
We got to link that. We'll link that in the description of this episode. But what was your take on that in terms of, like, so Nola Darling said that she was a polyamorous individual. Was that a reasonable depiction of polyamory in the media?
This is such a good question, and we probably could spend 2 hours on this question. and I will put it this way. You know, I had the fortunate experience in 1986. I was 12 years old, and so I had the fortunate experience of seeing the first She's Gotta Have It, mm-hmm, with Spike Lee, and mm-hmm, I remember how revolutionary that movie was for me. And then, so when I looked at the movie, it was very nostalgic, so mm-hmm, I just want to toss that out there. Mm-hmm. And so with how she depicted herself as a polyamorous woman, mm-hmm, you know, I'm going to look at it from the sense of, did she perpetuate any myths about polyamory? There may be a few that, you know, the poor communication is, but the expression that she had of her sexuality and how she was liberated as a result of some of her relationships, mm-hmm, and how she had her therapist and, you know, Opal, I wish she would have got with Opal, but
we all anyway, did.
You know, I believe that for us, when you read the article, there's going to be some of us who are 40, 50 years old that go, this show was great. It was fantastic. We had no issues with it. It was phenomenal. And folks who are the same age or a little older than Nola, they had some great issues with the show. And personally, I did not have as deep of issue with it because my lens was very different. So I think it was a fantastic depiction, number one, because it was the series was written and directed by women. And I just took a whole lot of things into account. So,
and do you also feel like maybe, like, I feel like maybe people who are Nola Darling's age were kind of like in the age of like, everything is woke, all of our media is woke all the time. And maybe like for someone a little bit older, you kind of like experience maybe the worst of the worst. And you're kind of like,
I could not say it better. You said it perfectly.
I should have been more articulate.
Yeah, you said that perfectly. That I should have wrote that down.
Yeah. Got it. And we just have one last question from Annie Sicari on Instagram. And Annie Sicari's question is, do you have any tips for an totally inexperienced couple trying to be non-monogamous?
Relax. Yes. Relax, actually, is it? And don't take yourself too seriously. You have to be able to laugh at it because there's going to be points where you want to cry. And so if you, you know, practice laughing and getting that muscle nice and strong, because you're going to hurt each other, you're going to fall short, you're going to mess up, you know, but as long as nobody dies, it's going to be okay.
And then even if they do, you know, like as long as you don't kill each other.
Okay. That's a part of
life.
Yeah.
That's a part of just trying to get really real. is there, this is just a me question now, is there a certain, like if it's a couple who's venturing into polyamory together, is there a certain level in their coupledom that you feel like folks need to be at to like venture into polyamory?
If you're in a brand new within a relationship, right? And you're just getting to know each other. And you both have had curiosities about polyamory and what that means. You've both been wanting to do it and you were looking for someone like-minded to do it with. I think that's fantastic and great. But if you're new within a relationship and someone just drops the bomb, hey, I want to try polyamory. You're like, what the hell? What's going
what
on?
Mean? Yeah.
That's not a good idea to go forward in. So it's just about, is everybody on the same page? It's the most important thing. And has everyone have the same intensity, or they have the same curiosity, or just something where they can meet and they, you know, they have this idea that this may be cool or something that's fun to experience, not look at it as, oh my God, my life is going to end.
Well, Ruby, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This was fantastic.
So enlightened.
I feel like we could actually talk for like another 4 hours or something.
Seriously.
Like that.
But
we won't do, because it's 11 p.m. EST.
It's 10. Yes.
Yes.
We'll get to wrapping. But for folks who want to follow you on the web and follow Poly Dallas Millennium, where can they do that at?
Our website is www.pdm2018.com. You can get your most accurate and up-to-date information there. You can follow me on Twitter at Poly Dallas, PolyDallas, and on Instagram at Black Sex Geek. So that's where you can find me.
Definitely get on there, and all of that will be in the description of this episode, folks. Thank you so much, Ruby.
Thank you so much.
Dope conversation, bro.
Yo, informative. I was sitting here snapping.
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
Like, felt mad
okay,
validated. Is any of this not gonna be real as fuck right now? Like,
yeah.
It was just, I hope everyone got their questions answered, what they did, but they got the right answer, and it'll help them on whatever path they want to go to. I mean, even I was sitting here like, okay, it's good to know that you don't have to beat yourself up and feel
exactly.
Like, I think that's a common misconception where you feel like, okay, we agreed to this, I have to be perfect now.
Exactly. And
I
like,
will feel no jealousy ever. I'm the perfect poly mate.
And
I never heard that. But dirty also bit. Just feeling like you have to be super carefree once you agree
yeah,
to
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, I just have to roll with the punches. And the fact that it is like something that they know is a misconception within the community that you don't get jealous. Like,
yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's okay. Don't beat yourself up. And I thought that was some great advice.
Yeah.
And I hope you guys thought so too.
Not to be like a Nola Darling apologist, but like that's kind of like where she was at.
Yeah.
Like maybe she actually just wants to be polyamorous, but isn't not perfect yet. Like she's working it the fuck out. Like maybe that's okay.
I mean, it is okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is okay.
Save the fact that the show's crap, but like, yeah.
She's a corny hoe.
Yeah.
She's really whack.
But like to some people, and as we can see, like to certain demographics, that's enough.
It's
she
okay
was
to
enough.
Be a corny
like,
hoe.
Whatever her corniness was, it was like, ooh, this resonates with me. Like,
yeah.
I think you were right in saying that we're constantly bombarded with media that's just like, woke. Oh, this is 2008.
This is not
We've
woke
done this already.
Enough. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know,
we
but
had
for
these
them,
conversations.
This is like, wow, this is a conversation. We didn't grow up with this. We didn't grow up with anybody on TV really doing this except
True.
For the movie
yeah.
when it came out.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
was controversial in and of itself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good to hear different perspectives.
I fucking dug that conversation. If you guys have more questions about polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, we do have two other guests on this month of programming that we're doing. So send it in, DM us, email us at IHUpodcast. Roll my Snapchat. I don't have the app on my phone, so I'm not gonna look at it. Haha, gags on you, motherfucker.
We don't do Snapchat
That's
no more,
what
man.
You get for using Snapchat. But yeah, please send us all your questions about polyamory and ethical non-monogamy, and we'll have the folks who are on the show answer them for you. This is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Hope Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Hope Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You could also follow innerhopeuprising.com to pay a bitch or check out merchandise.
You can follow me at BareAssSam on Instagram and Twitter.
You better change your
Snapchat
shit, man.
No more.
That's it.
You can also follow me at SlamRid.
Oh, you know,
depending on what you're trying to see. If you're trying to see that bare ass, follow bare ass. I'm just gonna pivot it to a porn account. That's how I save myself.
And if you would like to follow me Ashley Larry.
You can at Revy or Not on Twitter and Instagram.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.